Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
How's everybody doing today? Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Let's go to PurdyInsurance.com. They have repeat customers for a reason, long-term customers. Now here's the chance for you to be a long-term customer because they will take great care of you and all of your needs. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studios, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Four teens are out, they're on the lots, and they are spectacular. And the great people at Sunbury Motors will take very good care of you. They'll look at your budget, and they will fit a vehicle that fits your lifestyle and fits your budget. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today, Fran Fischer turns 90 years old. I know we've talked about this before briefly. We mentioned it in the broadcast. Thursday night, in Damon's before Bill O'Brien got there, I talked about it. Okay. But today is actually his birthday. Today's the day. And when you look back at the great history of Penn State football, there was a point where Rip Engel had done a marvelous job. Marvelous job. Won 104 games. Started getting Penn State to some bowl games. And so forth. You know, he started doing all that stuff, which was great. But there was a point where the program, and they had a 46,000-seat stadium when they moved it from the west side of campus near Rec Hall over to the east side of campus where it's wide open. And then Joe Paterno became the head coach of Penn State football. And when Joe Paterno became the head coach of Penn State football, some things started to happen. Now, TV quarterbacks had already started. It was called Wednesday Quarterbacks originally. Harris Lopez was the original host out of Lock Haven. And Rip Engel did the show. It's called Wednesday Quarterbacks. But then TV quarterbacks became the offshoot of that. And Castleman D. Chesley, C.D. Chesley, who was the genius behind the Notre Dame highlight show, was also running the Penn State broadcast at the time, and he had heard Fran Fischer in Lewistown. And Fran had a marvelous career in Lewistown and Greensburg as an on-air personality. Funny, witty, just like he is today, which is unbelievable. And C.D. Chesley heard Fran's voice, and he said, "Hey, for TV quarterbacks, we'd love to have you voice over the highlights." And that opened the door. And then with Tom Bender and with Mickey Bergstein, he joined the broadcast in 1966. And in 1970, he moved to the play-by-play job. And in the play-by-play job, he worked with Jim Tarman. Now, in the late 60s, early 70s, obviously Penn State is getting a toehold as to what's going on. Because remember, for years and years and years, Pitt was the power in Pennsylvania in college football. And in fact, it used to really irk Joe that some people at Pitt would refer to Penn State as, quote, that cow college. Ooh, did that make him mad? So they decided that they needed to go out to as many locations as possible. And the three key guys were Joe, obviously, Fran Fischer, and the guy that never really gets enough credit, Jim Tarman. They went to Penn State clubs, Knights of Columbus halls, alumni functions, okay, breakfasts, lunches, dinners, things like that, all over the state, and Fran made sure they went to as many radio stations as possible to build the network. And then when they needed somebody to transition to the Nittany Lion Club and run that, he brilliantly did that, and so many of the things that are implemented that are in place today were really Fran's ideas and forerunners to what they're doing now, fundraising. And he was the perfect person to do that, because Fran Fischer is the kind of individual that no one could possibly say a negative word about. His loyalty, his enthusiasm, his passion to go with his skill. Remember, he is in the Pennsylvania Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and with good reason. And this carried through the 1982 season. And then Fran stayed on, and when they started the Thursday night talk show, Fran was the host of that Thursday night talk show. And in 1994, 6 weeks before the start of the season, Bill Zimpher from Philadelphia had been the play-by-play voice. But Bill then was given a golden opportunity to become the play-by-play voice of the Miami Dolphins. But the opportunity also occurred 6 weeks before the season. They needed somebody to step in. And by the way, I failed to mention, by the way, John Grant, who worked his last, Fran worked his last few seasons the first time around with John, and John did a great job. They're a great combination. Well, in 1994, they asked Fran to step back into it. And Fran and George Paterno together formed a magical combination that has forever etched themselves in the minds and memories of every Penn State fan. And the two of them together, as ambassadors, as broadcasters, they're the ones that really triggered people bringing radios into the stadium. They had to hear what the Gold Dust Twins were saying, Fran and George. And Fran and George, Fran's rapport with the crowd in the tailgate show is far greater than, I mean, I need to ask him what his secret was, because, I mean, he's far better at that than I have ever been. And they together form that magical combination that has endeared themselves forever to Penn State fans. When Fran was doing the games with Jim Tarman and then subsequently with John Grant, maybe two games a year for Penn State out of the 11 regular season games were on TV. The other nine were on radio. He was the link between the fan and the game, like that perfect conduit. Now, later on, when it was Fran and George together, every game was on TV, but you had to hear what they were saying. And that's why people turned the sound down, listened to them. That's why people brought radios to the game, because they had to hear them. And when you're talking about the true treasures of Penn State over the years that set the table and the foundation for any possibility of this moving forward with success, he will always be one of the names that will be brought up. Great broadcaster, great voice, great enthusiasm, great personality, great loyalty, deep loyalty. Knew all the players and allowed us to know the players through him. That is Fran Fischer. And so we have put together just a little tribute to Fran on his 90th birthday, to which we say happy birthday.
And there's a fake to Williams. Back to pass down the middle. Garrity, touchdown! They shift out of a power eye to a wing T with two tight ends. And on the wing left is Williams. He goes in motion. Play action pass down the middle. Wide open, Bowman. Touchdown! 9 seconds left. We have the power set in the backfield. Nichols, Coles, and John Williams. Bowman and McCloskey are the tight ends. And Penn State is first and goal at the two. It is Mumford, Coles, and Williams. Mumford, Coles, and Williams. They shift to the wing tee. Mumford and Coles the setback. Williams in motion. Pass! Throws! Phillips! Touchdown! Kirk Bowman! Planted in the end zone with 4 seconds left on the clock. And the whole place is erupted. The Penn State bench is in the end zone. The fans are out of the stands. Kirk Bowman on a shoestring grab. What a call. Passing on first and goal from the two.
Penn State in a double wing set this time. The lone setback is John Williams. The slot man left is Warner. Straight back to pass goes Blackledge down the field. Complete to Warner at the 45, the 50, the 40. It's going to be a touchdown, Penn State. An absolutely magnificently performed look-in pass to Kurt Warner from the slot. The four deep never knew where he was. He made the grab at about the 45-yard line, and there was nobody going to catch it.
Here comes a linebacker off the play action. They pick it up nicely. Blackley showing to Jackson. He's at the 15, the 10, the 5. Penn State touchdown.
Blackledge off the play action is going to pass. Throws.
It's complete to Kenny Jackson at the 20, the 15, the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Penn State.
Mike Stillman will snap to Strang. It's back. It's down. It's up.
It's good!
It's second down and goal to go. The ball at about the 3.5-yard line. Penn State is now into a power set with Coles, Williams, and Warner in the lineup. Penn State has been here before. There's a gift to Warner. Skipping to the outside. He's got the corner. Touchdown, Penn State! Penn State is short of the first down by a half a yard. They go to a power eye as Kirk Bowman comes in at the other tight end. Three running backs in the lineup. The give is to Warner. Warner cuts to the right. Still on his feet. He's going to go into the end zone, but there's a flag on the play. I'm afraid Penn State moved too soon. Warner scored the touchdown. Let's see against whom the penalty is called. It's offside. Georgia declines. Touchdown, Penn State. Warner unofficially now is over 100 yards, and we don't need to remind you that Penn State has never lost a game that Kurt Warner, in which Kurt Warner has gained 100 yards or more. Blackledge has him in the same formation. Kevin Bow has replaced Kenny Jackson at wide receiver. Off the play action, Blackledge is going to pass. He's going deep down the left corner. Gurdy's there. Touchdown! Greg Gurdy on a perfect throw from Todd Blackledge. And they got him run conscious and beat him on a streak pattern down the left sideline. What a play. It comes down to this. Mike Stillman. Snap. Kick is away.
Game is over.
3-2-1. Penn State National Champion.
The tributes to people, when they deserve tributes, are always so much better when the person can sit there and can listen to it. Happy birthday to a true Penn State treasure, Fran Fischer. Back with more after this.
Even when they grow up, your kids can still surprise you. My son calls to tell me he bought his first new car, picked the make, model, and dealer all by himself, and negotiated his own deal. But when it came to insuring his new ride, he wanted Dad's advice. I told him one word, Selective. They've always done right by me. It's nice to know you're still needed.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Focus four-door sedan under 5,000 miles, just $14,385. Four-door Nissan Rogue four-wheel drive, only $15,985. 2012 Kia Forte, $14,559. 2008 Pontiac Torrent all-wheel drive, $15,954. Beautiful 2009 Lincoln MKZ, $14,995. And a 2010 Kia Soul 5-door wagon, just $12,875.
Call 570-286-7746. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at SunburyMotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Okay, welcome back. Anybody wish to reminisce about Fran can do so at 800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. And like I said, certain people come along at certain moments, and the timing is perfect for both institution and individual. And the timing in Fran Fisher's life was perfect for Fran Fisher and perfect for Penn State and Penn State football. So,
you know, Fran Fisher and he was Bill Zimpher as well. Those are the guys I remember growing up listening to Penn State before, as you said, was even on more than one game a year on television.
Well, Bill, you would have had almost every game on at that point.
Yeah, but I didn't. I didn't. I got so used to listening to it on the radio, I didn't watch it on TV because I liked the radio band a bit better.
Yeah, because Gil Santos before that, and Gil's one of the best ever. To the point where NFL Network was promoting what the Falcons and the Patriots, and they keep using Gil's play-by-play.
Oh yeah.
And Bobby does a, and Bob took his place. Bobby's terrific in terms of the guy that took his place. We had Bob on the show last year. Bob Soke, remember him?
Yep, I remember.
From Navy, he got the job. So
didn't Bill go on to the Dolphins?
Yeah, that's why he left. That's as I related the story. That's the reason why Frank got paired up with George again.
Right, and that's why I said that's the second time. I remember listening to Fran. Like I said, Fran, the one thing that always sticks in my head is when he used to yell Booker Moore. Oh, I just loved the way he'd call a Booker Moore, Booker Moore. Didn't matter if it was a 2-yard run or a 22-yard run.
All right, exactly. So that is the story there. And we wish him happy birthday. So if anybody would like to jump in at 800-795-9565, want to wish him happy birthday, you certainly can do that. More than happy to hear from you. The Tampa Bay Rays are losing 2-1 to the Orioles in the top of the fourth. Baseball is now in that danger zone area. And the one thing that, you're never going to see probably – that's going to happen. They need to reduce the season, but they need to. I mean, they need to finish up the season by Labor Day and have the playoffs rolling and use September as the month because October, just it doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore. I mean, maybe spill over maybe a little bit into October, but you get to a weekend, which is supposed to be prime time for sports, you get to a weekend. Saturday, college football owns. I mean, now you're making the transition into conference play. I mean, LSU's playing Georgia this weekend. Do you think I'm watching baseball?
No.
And I love baseball. It's the last weekend of the regular season. They should already be into the playoffs by now. I mean, they're going to be into the playoffs when Penn State plays Michigan. Do you think anybody in the state's going to care when Penn State's playing Michigan on that Saturday? I mean, both the Tigers and the Pirates might be in the playoffs at that point, still playing on October 12th. But the TV ratings, I'll bet the TV ratings are better for Penn State, Michigan, than they will be for whatever the playoff happens to be on TBS.
And good luck on a Sunday afternoon.
Sunday can't do it. Can't do it. So there's a lot. Baseball continues to have a lot of issues, which I wish they didn't have, because I think there's a lot of good things about it. I mean, I enjoy the game so much. But they do need to make some changes. I mean, the season is too long. The season probably should be 150 games. They need to knock off a dozen games somewhere. Need to start maybe in the middle of March and try and somehow get the schedule done by Labor Day in a 150-game schedule. First round needs to be a best of three and not just a one-game playoff. But will any of these things happen? No, because they know they need the money. And they're stubborn enough to still believe that they're the national pastime. They are. They aren't. Believe me, I'm telling you right now, the Seattle-Jacksonville game had a higher TV rating than anything Major League Baseball is going to generate anywhere this week. And you're talking Jacksonville. Seattle-Jacksonville. Dick in Milton. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Steve. I just wanted to wish Fran a happy birthday. I had a cute story. Well, I actually got to talk to Fran for a long time, and I was lucky enough to go to Randy Sidler's. They had a ceremony for him when he finished school over at Danville, and Joe was there, and Fran was there. But another time, we went down to see West Virginia and Penn State play. And just to show you that Fran didn't get any special privilege, we sat right behind him at the game. So whatever seats he got, we got the same kind of seats. And I thought that was kind of neat. I mean, it's not like they put him in someplace special. Our seats were okay, but he didn't get any special treatment down, at least not from West Virginia people. So maybe he just got stuck with the Penn State people at that particular time. So I thought that was kind of cute. But we had the same thing at Michigan, because it wasn't. We sat real close to Franco Harris and Lydell Mitchell. They had to have the same kind of seats at Michigan that we had. So sometimes the guys that don't get the special treatment, you think they would, though.
Well, they might now, because both those places now have luxury suites, and they didn't have that stuff back then. But
yeah,
you know. But Fran is.
He was definitely one of a kind. He put a lot of good years in at Penn State, obviously, and that's why I said one thing. Before you got the best job in North America as far as an announcer.
Kidding.
Well, I think so. When you do that,
I think my
last comment to tell you about how long the baseball season. I'm an Oriole fan, and their season actually ended a couple of weeks ago, but they just didn't realize it yet.
I can relate to that.
By the way, one quick note: you called and had four things on.
Yeah.
I think it was Friday. Did I get to all 4 points?
I think you covered the one later on about when I said about the third down conversion rate. And,
okay.
But I had something going on Saturday. I really didn't even get to listen to much of the game, or I didn't watch any of it. How was their tackling on Saturday?
They actually no issue with it. There was no issue with it. And I'm sorry, because really, Saturday's the best broadcast we ever. No, I'm just kidding. You know, sorry you missed it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I really do hope they play a lot better the rest of the year, yeah. In a sense, because the competition,
sure.
The games are going to get a lot tougher now. I mean, they just are. Right. Just the nature
well,
of the game.
They are, and but I'm glad the conference is eventually moving to 9 games, because that fourth non-conference game, whether it's Penn State, Kent State, or Ohio State, Florida A&M, or South Dakota State, Nebraska, or Maine, Northwestern, it's just not doing anything. It doesn't move the needle. And by having a ninth conference game, I think it's a big plus for the fans, Dick,
across the
board. Now, it's going to be a lot more trouble for the Indianas and the Minnesotas of the world, because their only way of getting to a bowl game is by going 4-0 in the non-conference and then squeaking out two conference wins to get to 6. I mean, they're going to have to work harder to get there.
Yeah, well, hopefully Penn State won't find themselves in that situation for a little while.
I mean, well,
they're not ineligible. How long are they ineligible for a bowl game?
Still got 3 more years, including this one. So it's
three
this year
years.
And then 14 and 15.
Right. And, well, thank God that thank God that they're going to the Dublin Bowl there for next, what is it, next
yeah,
season.
Yeah, that was a smart move. Very savvy move.
The coach did a nice job with it because I thought he wanted to take him to Hawaii, and Hawaii didn't want to play him or something like that. I don't know what the story was.
They did not, and they've also changed the rule on that, too. What they've done, Dick, it used to be if you played a game outside the continental U.S., meaning Hawaii, you could have a 13th game in your schedule. They changed that rule 3 years ago, and then Hawaii's schedule, because they have a conference schedule too, is filled up right now.
Okay. Well, anyhow, my main point was to mention Fran, because he really, those guys are getting few and far between, and hopefully maybe some down the line somebody will be honoring you on your 95th birthday. What do you think?
I'd love to get the 90, and I'd like to have at least somebody say something nice.
Well, have Kevin make a note of that there, that when he's doing the show for you, then when you're 90, then he can honor you.
Say something nice. I better work on it now.
I'm going to have to come up with cash.
Hey, cash will do it.
We'll see you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dick. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Back with more of your calls in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Gets the snap. Back he goes. Steps up in the pocket. He delivers for Belton. He's got it. Touchdown, Penn State. He dove inside the pylon, and the Nittany Lions, with 9 seconds to go in the opening quarter, get on the board first.
Here's a handoff. Pepper right through the hole. Touchdown, Shekalimi.
Hackenberg's Zwinak left side to the goal line. Touchdown, Penn State. Zach Zwinak with his sixth rushing touchdown of the season. And the Nittany Lions, with 9:26 to go in the opening half, now lead it 13-0. Play action, Reardon delivers. Intercepted! Penn State picks it off. Ryan Kaiser with the interception. He almost had one in the first half, and Kaiser gets one now. And the Nittany Lions quickly turn the table.
Kimberly on the last play. Back to pass. Goes up to the corner of the end zone. Incomplete. Time has expired.
Zwinak walks into the end zone. Touchdown. Penn State, his third touchdown of the day. Zerby led him home, and the Nittany Lions now lead it 30-0.
And Sammy Fickett kicked the longest field goal by a Nittany Lion ever in Beaver Stadium.
I actually saw that come over my screen, and I had to look at it twice to make sure it wasn't a typo before I said it at the Bucknell game. I'm like, really? That's a kick?
54 yards. Now, it's not the longest Beaver Stadium field goal. That's 57 yards by Gary Homer of Ohio University. But the 355-yarders that Chris Barr hit in his career were all on the road. They were all on the road. Massimo Manca had the previous Penn State record at Beaver Stadium, 53 yards, and Sammy kicked it from 54.
Oh, there's a flashback for you. Massimo Manca.
Which then revives one of the great Fran Fischer moments. 1979, the last 54-yard field goal by a Penn Stater was Herb Menhart. And Terry Rutkowski got the ball out, and they moved it and got to the North Carolina State, 37-yard line? And he tries a 54-yard attempt to win the game, and the ball grazes the crossbar and goes over. And Fran yells out, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus." So, here's a good one, and this is from MMQB Monday Morning Quarterback Richard Deitch. And the story is on reviving the radio star. High Def TV made the living room a better viewing experience than attending games for many NFL fans. But football's word painters, the announcers in your earbuds, could make the upper deck a go-to destination again. And now listen, he talked to three guys. As he chronicles the exploits of Joe Flacco, Jacoby Jones, and Terrell Suggs each week, Jerry Sandusky, and yes, that is the play-by-play voice of the Ravens, long time, a really great sportscaster, says he envisions his older sister, Ruth McFadden, listening to his broadcast from her home in Silver Spring, Maryland. We grew up in a football family, and she knows a great deal about football. but she could not diagram a tackle trap. His father, John, by the way, was a longtime assistant coach in the NFL. She cares about the people, the storylines, the flow of the game, where the ball is, what the crowd is like, and great storytelling. I'm always talking to my sister when I'm on the air without her realizing it. Ruth McFadden is part of a large group of NFL fans rarely written about, those who listen to the NFL on radio. With so many fans owning big screen, high def televisions with surround sound systems and other new age diamonds to go with it, radio coverage of the league often feels like an afterthought. So much has been written about the home experience versus the in-game experience, but the debate is always television-centric. It makes you wonder, does radio coverage of the NFL have a long-term future? Says Sandusky, it does because it caters to everyone who can't be home or at the stadium, people on the road, people working, all the people who cannot be at a commonly consumed spot for football. The biggest advantage radio has over television is that fans, given their loyalties, generally prefer a local broadcast to a national broadcast. It's why you likely know someone who has synced up the television so that the home team radio broadcast plays concurrently. We know from our research that the true hardcore Giants fan still wants to listen to us, says Bob Papa, who has called Giants on radio since 1995 and also does the team's preseason games on television. People always come up to me and tell me different contraptions and ways that they are listening to us. The Giants fan, Bears fan, Bengals fan, or whomever, they want the hometown announcer because of the excitement factor as opposed to the guys on television who give you a down-the-middle broadcast. Fans want the inside skinny on their team. They don't want a profile or a feature or a sideline reporter giving you a story on the other team. They want the broadcast to be about their team, home team centric. Papa says that the Giants home games are not broadcast on a delay, and that's a nod to the fans at MetLife Stadium who are listening to the game. For road games, Papa says there is a delay. It's minimal, usually a couple seconds, to make it easier for people to sync up their televisions with his broadcast. Sandusky often hears the same thing in Baltimore, with hundreds of fans telling him that they run his Ravens radio broadcast through their television. Howie Deneroff, the longtime executive producer of Westwood One Sports, is also bullish on the future of the NFL radio scene, given how society has become mobile with its sports consumption. Deneroff says more than 23 million viewers turned down a portion of last year's Super Bowl broadcast on Westwood One. That number does not include satellite radio, online, or mobile, which all carry the Westwood One broadcast. Radio, or audio, more appropriately nowadays, is accessible anywhere via radio, cars, online, mobile devices, says Deneroff. We have immediacy, mobility, and other intangibles that TV doesn't have, especially in unusual times. Says, I will point out that last year's Super Bowl, we were the first media entity back on the air reporting the power outage. First to report it was isolated to the Superdome and not affecting other parts of New Orleans. And the first to report what caused it. All were important because, unfortunately, the word terrorism was an immediate thought that entered everybody's mind. Radio is still important, an important means of communication, even though ways of consuming it have changed. What makes a successful radio broadcast for football? It's all about your ability to relay the action in a timely and descriptive manner while conveying the emotion of the game, says Ian Eagle, who calls Thursday Night Football for Westwood One, as well as the wild card divisional games on radio as well. Kevin Harlan's the radio voice for Monday Night Football. There's a certain ebb and flow to a radio broadcast, Eagle adds, but most importantly, you have to ask yourself the question, are the listeners getting the information they need to follow along? Let's see. I'll skip down here just a little bit. So what will NFL radio broadcasts sound like in 20 years, assuming they exist? It is just so hard to predict technology because it changes so often, Deneroff says. When we, Westwood One, extended our NFL contract 5 years ago, the words mobile audio device were not present anywhere, nor were tablets or other types of of things that we have in everyday life now. Denneroth believes the audio quality of the broadcast will continue to improve to the point where it sounds like the announcers are in the same room with you. He also predicts that consumers will have an option, no matter the device, to sync up the audio to a television broadcast without delay. He says, "I'd like to be there. Let's see. I'd like there to be a way to save the audio to listen to later on all devices, much like satellite radio has on some of its units." Denneroth says, "That way, if you can listen live, you can record it and then play it back later." Bob Papa expects fantasy football to become a larger part of the radio broadcast in the future, and that broadcasters will have to be well-versed in the opposing team because of the intense interest in that growing industry. Because, you know, there's some people out there that will always pick against the team they root for because of fantasy football. Some people do that. Sandusky predicts that radio will become a much larger part of the stadium in-game experience. Says every team has a stadium announcer who will give you the basic facts, Sandusky says. But you can tell things in their earbuds that there's no way a stadium announcer can tell them. I think it totally enhances the experience. Baseball fans have done this for years, and I don't know why NFL teams do not follow this model. It would create a greater depth and dimensionality for the game, the in-game experience. That was an interesting article. And a lot of people do that.
I'm actually one of those people.
Yeah, no, a lot of people love to turn down the sound. And
well, and the other thing you'll find over the years, in this business, I was one that was in on the decision. We were a longtime affiliate of Westwood One in the Monday nights, Thursday nights, Sunday night, and Sunday afternoon games. And one of the things that we found in our research was that people wanted to hear their home broadcasts. So that's why we made decisions. We made decisions based on bringing you home broadcasts of games.
Right.
Instead of the national side of it.
And actually, that's what I enjoy in listening to when I get the chance to listen to Sirius. Is the home team announcer.
Well, and I think that's what you're going to see some national broadcasts, you know, the national style broadcast end up going to. One of the things I always liked about Major League Baseball years ago when we were an affiliate here on WKOK, and I used to run those games on Saturday night, they did the hometown inning. So you'd get a little bit of, I think it was like the fifth or sixth inning, you get a little bit of the announcer that would follow the team all year long. And no disrespect to anybody who does the game of the week or the national broadcast, because you have to be well prepped on both teams to do that. That takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. But from a listener standpoint, I want that in-depth on my team more than anything else.
Sure, of course you do.
And doing a national broadcast or doing the game of the week type of broadcast, you don't have that opportunity.
Well, actually, the World Series used to be the two teams' announcers.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
How do you think Al Michaels was discovered? He was the Cincinnati Reds play-by-play guy.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yep, it used to be the two home team announcers along with, and then later on they would put Kirk Gowdy with them. But it used to be the two home team announcers together doing the game. Mel Allen, Bob Prince. You know, Chuck Thompson, Vin Scully.
Well, you remember the big debacle in 1980 when the Phillies won the series and Harry Callis didn't call the last out. They actually had to do it in studio, post production, to do it for a lot of the videos that they were going to make in 1980 after the series win because Philly fans wanted to hear Harry call it.
Well, of course, exactly. And that's why now you're seeing home team broadcasts now being allowed in the postseason. I mean, yeah, we did that tribute to Fran on his 90th birthday earlier. Do you realize the first bowl game he ever broadcast was the Sugar Bowl with Georgia? He He was not allowed to broadcast any other bowl games up until then.
All national rights.
Yeah, every one of them. Then when he came back the second time, he couldn't do the first Rose Bowl game. Now, even that's changed. I mean, I had a chance to do the Rose Bowl. So that's finally changed. But that's the way it used to be. I mean, it's taken a while to get out of an antiquated mindset about media and sports. And slowly but surely, I think people are coming around and realizing, you know, it's good to have the local on to go with the national and things like that. We will wrap it up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. It's great to have everybody on board today. Hope you enjoyed our tribute to Fran Fischer.
And if you happen to miss any of it, you can go online to stevejonesshow.com in just a few minutes. Click on the Hour 2 podcast, and we'll have it there for you.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that happened that I did not like on Saturday. I always watch the Big Ten final.
When was that? Was that Michigan?
No. It's the show on the Big Ten Network.
Oh, you mean the scoreboard. All right.
I mean, they gave like Penn State like 45 seconds worth of highlights on the Kent State game, and then that was it. It's a 1 hour show. It deals with 12 schools. I mean, what the heck?
You would think in an hour you'd have enough to do substantial highlights for Michigan State, Notre Dame, because I knew that was one that, you know, a lot of people would want to find out about. You know, the Michigan game, but 45 seconds?
I mean, they justifiably showed Rutgers and Maryland highlights. They both had big wins. Maryland shut out West Virginia, I think, 37-0, and Rutgers beat Arkansas 28-24. And a little, like, you know, welcome home Brett Bielema. And I sat there and it's like, it's a 12-school conference. Now, do they have to make it equal for everybody? No, but it was. And I realize there are storylines in the conference. Guyton threw 6 touchdown passes. Okay, I mean, that's big. That's an Ohio State record.
How many highlights for that game? That's what I want to find out.
I mean, Nebraska, South Dakota State is a nothing matchup, except Bo Pelini did not have what you would call a nothing week. So it's a big deal. You know what I mean? So I
bet OSU got more than 45 seconds.
What they did was wrong. You know, it doesn't have to be equal, but you have to have more meat than that.